Hello and welcome to LCWS After Dark.
After Dark.
I am one of your hosts, Melissa.
And I'm the other one, Eli. And today we're talking about drawing out your inner Shakespeare, which is Melissa's specialty.
Yeah. Yep, we're talking about poetry with the poetry nerd.
Well, I think who else is it that does poetry? It was because during our first year, there were so many of you guys, and then I think it just came down to like you and who else?
Neo does poetry.
Yeah, Neo. Because it was really you, Ujwal, there was Matt, and there were a couple other people that did poetry, but it's kind of just dwindled down to you. Though I've noticed a couple of the first years are more interested in poetry, so that'll be nice.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah. Melissa, what is poetry?
Wow.
What is it?
That is not, it's, I guess, not really easily defined as just like, what is it?
Okay, then tell us about poetry.
Poetry is using language to craft art and meaning.
That's a pretty vague definition. I feel like poetry itself can be a lot of things. So it's kind of like defining writing, where you can go with the dictionary response, which is, you know, putting words down on paper to express a thought or to tell a story. And poetry kind of has that same kind of meaning to it. But I would say generally poetry tends to, if you're thinking about the traditional poem, you know, you think rhyming verses and couplets and things like that. But the type of poetry you do isn't like that.
Yeah, what you mentioned there is like poetic techniques
mm-hmm.
that are often used, especially historically, in poetry. I find poetry is more about the meaning you're trying to make with language. Then you can use like poetic techniques to help portray that meaning better or more accurately to how you want to portray it.
Okay.
But poetry is not the techniques itself.
Oh. So what kinds of techniques can you use?
Yeah, so some poetic techniques that I would like to highlight that I personally didn't learn about until later on in my life, when I more started getting into poetry more seriously or more often. My favorite is personification, which is attributing human-like attributes, like emotion, action, roles, to something that is non-human, like an object, perhaps an abstract concept. Motif is another one that I think brings a lot of cohesiveness to poems, and it is something that I would like to use more, but I don't use it as often intentionally. Motif is basically a image or a symbol that recurs throughout a poem or a literary work, or perhaps a series of poems. Motifs are often used in such a way that develops a theme that persists throughout. Another one is anaphora, which is using repetition for emphasis, creating emphasis using repetition, whether it is repeating a particular word or a phrase. It can create musicality as well within the poem. Another one that I find really interesting that I studied a little bit is apostrophe, which is the speaker of the poem addressing someone or something that is not explicitly present in the poem. Apostrophe is interesting because it's more subtle, and it's not necessarily one that I find that I use intentionally, but looking closer to some of my work, I can see it, and I think it's just one of those ones that are more interesting when you look deeper into work. Now, there are a plethora of other poetic and literary techniques out there, and I find the easiest thing to do is search up poetic techniques, find ones that kind of stick out to you. Perhaps do further research and find examples on how certain techniques were used and examples of where they've been used. The idea is, how can this technique serve your piece and the meaning that you want to create?
Yeah, so I guess certain types of techniques for poetry can be, you know, rhyming verses, and usually I remember in elementary school it was like, okay, the first phrase is A, the second phrase is B, the third phrase is A, the second phrase is, or the fourth phrase is B, and then you'll have a C. So it's like, the dog, the cat, the log, the frat went outside. I know there are other techniques such as, what are they? You can tell I don't write poetry that often. Something you can do with poetry that's really cool in the modern age is that, at least when I do it, you can change colors and formatting, or you can black things out. We did a workshop once where it was making poetry by blacking out parts of a book, right?
Yep. That's blackout poetry.
Yeah.
It's a form of experimental poetry. I love doing the workshops on experimental poetry. I usually find a new technique to play around with. Like, one year I did it, we did blackout poetry, which I tend to bring back a lot as well, because it's really fun and very easy to do. Well, it's not necessarily the most easy, per se.
It's a fan favorite, though.
Yeah, it's one of the more fun ones. Another one I brought last year was cut and paste poetry, where you like take scissors and tape or some other sort of method to glue things on a piece of paper, and you cut out words or phrases that feel like you want to use, and then you like paste them to a piece of paper.
It's kind of like, you know, when you're a kid and they're the word magnets on the fridge and you just like make nonsense on them.
Yeah. An interesting thing about form is the form that you choose to use can say something about the piece of writing that you're creating. If you're doing cut and paste poetry, maybe it can be like a piece that is about like taking something apart and making something new. Like, that could be the content of the piece as well as the form that's being used.
I see.
So there's like layering of meaning there.
Oh, I never thought to analyze it like that. So that's interesting. So what other kinds of poetry are there?
I mean, there are
so many
hundreds of different forms that you can use. Some popular ones are like sonnets, which was one that like Shakespeare wrote a lot of.
Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, I could be very wrong. I swear some of the Indian epics were poems, weren't they?
I'm not sure if I know what those are.
The Indian epics? Here, let's Google.
Yeah, I don't think I do.
Yeah, the Indian epic poetry is poetry written in the Indian subcontinent, traditionally called Kavya. I have these two books, I can't pronounce them. Ramayana and the Mahabharata were originally composed in Sanskrit and later translated into other Indian languages, and they're five great epics of Tamil literature, and etc., etc. They're some of the oldest surviving epic poems ever written. I have them.
You know, I've also read some of them for an ancient heroes course that I did.
Oh.
Yeah, but epic is another form of poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Paradise Lost is an epic. It's just basically an entire book worth of one poem.
Wow. That's a long poem.
Epic refers to, like, it being really long.
So, for people who've never written poetry, how would you suggest they go about doing it?
Honestly, my first instinct is to be like, maybe research some poetic devices.
Metaphors.
Or research like forms you might want to use, or research other poets. One thing is, just like if you want to be like a novel writer, you have to read in order to write.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend reading poets and reading poetry, and often you'll find styles that poets write in that will like inspire you and inspire your own style. So honestly though, before doing that, just start writing down ideas for poems, or just like start writing whatever you feel like poetry might be. it's okay to just write and not so much think too much about it, just write.
So just like writing down your thoughts and emotions and, you know, just seeing what words come to you naturally. Yeah.
And then from there you can take it and build upon it with research, and you can like take what you wrote and be like, how could I do this to better portray the meaning that I'm getting at?
Yeah, like saying things indirectly rather than directly is a large part of traditional poetry, I'd say.
What that also does is it makes it, in a way, like more universal.
Mm-hmm.
You can write about a specific incident in your life, and it could be relatable in that, but changing up the language and changing it into like a more metaphorical sense can like broaden it to people finding their own meaning within it.
Meaning.
It makes it a little more universal.
And I would say, and you can find inspiration and meaning in other people's works, or even just like mundane things around you. If you are on Tumblr, I'm not anymore, but sometimes you'll see posts that are like people seeing things on the wall and are like, I can't even write about it because it's already poetry. Just like the symbolism and the meaning behind it. Like, for example, let's say you see, this is a cliche, but you have like a couple meeting again for the first time after war, and they're hugging and they're crying, and like, what more is there to say about that? It's already poetry in of itself, right? That's obviously not exactly the mundane, but even just cooking sometimes, you know, having a peaceful moment with your family, or you see something funny, or even just your internal thoughts, they can all become poetry.
Absolutely. A poem that I read recently for one of our classes, it was written based off a walk. It was William Wordsworth and Dorothy Wordsworth went on a walk. She wrote about it in the form of a journal, and he later read her journal and took that and wrote a poem based on her observations, and I guess his observations, because they were both on the same walk. It can be as mundane as that, but then it turned into something pretty beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I once wrote a poem about a plastic bag that I saw on a tree while I was on a walk.
All right. Would we like to do some short story, or I guess poetry readings?
Yeah.
So, this story is Ophelia Ophelia, and I wrote it way back when. I don't even know when I actually wrote this. It was uploaded around the time that we created the website, but I think it was actually made in the second part of my first year, or maybe first semester of my second year.
Yeah, I remember I also wrote based off the same idea. I think during one of the workshops we were working together, and we came up with this idea about a ghost named Ophelia, and we both wrote different things.
Actually, I think you had a separate interpretation. Yeah. You had a separate story with her.
Yeah. We both had very different interpretations. I think mine is more in the form of a short story, but yours kind of reads more poetically.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's exactly a poem. It reads poetically, but it's not entirely a poem. Submitted by, there's apparently an unnamed co-author. I don't know who the other person was, but I've used Ophelia a few times afterwards. I think, wasn't it a combination of a image prompt and a like written prompt?
I don't think there was an image prompt.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'll get started on reading this one. So here's Ophelia, Ophelia.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ophelia, Ophelia, was machst du, Ophelia? Que fais-tu, Ophelia? What are you doing, Ophelia? What are you doing at the bottom of Errol's pond? Hair as black as ink, skin as gray as the fog in the morning, your locket is still around your neck, but not for long. What are you doing, Ophelia? Pounding at the ice? Your hands cannot break it. Your nails are bleeding from their beds. Ophelia, Ophelia, buried under ice and snow, tears and wails, your glass eyes roll from their sockets, clattering down the street and into the sewer. Your locket stays around your neck. Who's in the locket, Ophelia? Who is it? Who is so important to you that you capture them in your heart, in your mind? It's a woman. She has curly black hair, black skin, and eyes as warm as a fire in the snowstorm. She's drawing something, something linear and angular, with rules and numbers. Perhaps it's a building. Perhaps it's a machine. Who is she, Ophelia? What has she done to stay so near to you? A friend coming to you in your darkest hour? A lover whispering sweet nothings in your ear while you drift asleep? A sister? I was your sister once. Not for long, but long enough. I saw you again today, sitting in the park where all the pigeons gather. It's a good spot. There are no cars, but plenty of those faceless drones walking through. I don't know why you're always watching them. It's not like they're interesting, their slick, monotone suits. I'm much more interesting. You're much more interesting. More interesting than these fools. You're the only color in my life, the only splash of red in a world of white, a world of gray areas and zones of contrast. You change clothes daily. Sometimes more often, oftentimes less. A store logo, a shirt off a little girl, a tie off a person rushing into a taxi, the shape of a snail shell. It doesn't bother you, does it? Being second. Always being second place, copying what other people are doing and getting their leftovers. You never did like to win. It's something I've always admired about you, you know. Something I always took advantage of. Ophelia, Ophelia, you are gone today. No words peel from your tongue because you are not there to speak. The clouds are not here, nor is the rain. It's a rare sunny day in the city, and the public is out in hordes. Families gathering on the bench, dogs running amok, and lovers kissing behind trees. All very lovely, I'm sure, but Ophelia, where are you? I'm worried. I cannot see you, and I am afraid. Very afraid. Who has found you? What has led you astray from me? Stay close to me. I will protect you. So, this was a fun one, because this one had a lot of descriptions, and then also we have the kind of, we're going to have a podcast on writing queer characters later, but there's kind of an implication that something's going on with the woman in the locket. And I think the idea was that she was murdered, and she was found in the bottom of Errol's pond, and you know, they found her body, but now she's a ghost and she just hangs around in the city and she takes on the appearance of other people. And there's this mysterious narrator who's talking to her about her, who I can't remember if I decided maybe it was a sister, maybe it was someone who was obsessed with her. I don't remember what it was.
I'm not really sure you ever talked to me about, like, who the narrator is. Mm. But I really liked your use of perspective in that one. I think it's kind of like second perspective. It feels like it should be third person's perspective, but at the same time, it feels like second person's
perspective. It almost...
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure if it's second. It's, like, first person omniscient, I would almost say. Like... But it's like, I think second person is you, and
mm-hmm.
it's very interesting.
Yeah,
I would say
it feels like it, like, borders the lines between second and third person.
I would agree.
It kind of reminds me of the narrator in a book, in the book.
Oh, okay, I've never read that one.
The narrator in that book is technically mm-hmm. a character. Sort of. It has, like, characterizing qualities. I believe it's supposed to be the devil or something like that. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I read.
I've had other books.
But it's like...
Yeah, I've had books like this as a child where, for example, the name of this book is Secret Series by Synonymous Bosch. And that person, the narrator was basically a character. And then if you read The Fifth Season, which is an incredible book, people tend to either love it or hate it, but I really liked it. It was...
Yeah, I've heard a lot of discourse about that.
We could do a whole podcast episode on that. We could do a series on it. But it uses first, second, and third person, and it's so crazy. But yeah, this one...
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, highly recommend it. But yeah, this one was just something fun. I really like this piece, and I'm glad that I wrote it.
Yeah, I like how this piece just keeps going. Because you, like, years later, like 2 years later, you wrote the second part to
Yes.
it. That is where the image prompt comes in.
Right.
Originally, it was not an image prompt. I did a little bit of investigating while you were reading it. I think it was an image prompt that I found for one of our, like, workshops. I don't think it was more of an activity workshop than an actual workshop, I think. But I also found our original document where we're like just making bullet point notes of who Ophelia is. For some reason, she's a Trudeau fan. What? Where did that come from? No idea.
She's a Trudeau fan?
Yeah, we have like notes about her, and one of her notes is that she always says "ooh" in different, like, different times, and it conveys meaning so people understand her. Then the second point is she's a Trudeau fan. Her voice sounds like a whisper, drips water all the time. Peaceful person, but very intense face. Where did the Trudeau fan come from? I feel like that was
I'm
probably
guessing that was probably
a
a
joke,
joke
yeah.
based off of what was happening in the meeting.
Probably.
Kind of like the last meeting that I ran, it was a horror workshop, and I used an example of creating tension by saying there's a cat in the oven, and the oven is turning on,
Yeah.
and you can't get to the cat, and everyone started freaking out. And I was like, yeah, exactly. But then for the rest of the workshop, everyone would not stop talking about the cat.
Yeah, we had to make sure your cats were okay.
Oh, yeah, my cats are
Yeah.
okay. One is sleeping on my bed,
The
snoring
thing
right
that you
now.
tend to do when whenever we make up like documents like this when we're working together during the meetings is you never write down what the prompt was. You just write down prompt or second prompt. Though
Yeah, that's true. I don't
you did write down that
I
the
don't
second
usually
prompt was to create a setting, so at least we have more context there. But the first one is you just didn't write it
Yeah,
down.
I don't ever provide context for anything. You're welcome.
Yeah. Every time I write for LCWS like a prompt, I always write down what the prompt is on the top of the page.
Yeah, I will usually write the date of the meeting, and that's
Yeah,
about
no.
it.
This document is titled CWS October 22nd, 2020. That's it. Not
Yeah,
even like what workshop it was.
I don't ever write down what
That's
workshop it is.
okay.
I just, if I would need something from LCWS, sometimes I don't even title it like that. I just open a blank
And just
document.
leave it untitled.
All right. Would you like to read yours?
Yeah. Mine is actually from an assignment that I had in my poetry reading class.
Ooh.
I don't entirely remember like what the assignment was specifically, but I think it had something to do with using form. And the form I chose was a sonnet, because historically sonnets are like love poems, and I wanted to use the form of the sonnet to kind of go against that idea, because this poem is like about the opposite. It's like not experiencing love or like that kind of desire. It's called Missing Butterflies. Voices all around scream whispers about the butterflies, marvelous beings lifting the body to new heights once crouched, become the air in your lungs so freeing. They say the wings make a beautiful sound, fluttering heartbeats deep within the soul, an enchantment close ones can hear, spellbound, a rune etched resolute in dark charcoal. But what if one never had butterflies, a misshapen chrysalis in the mold? You are not whole, I'll fix you, they say, lies. You believe because that's all you've ever been told. Do you miss your butterflies in lament, or do you live your life without regret?
Is that the
Yeah,
end?
it's a short poem. It's four stanzas. I accidentally misread one of the stanzas, but you know, it's not the stanza, but one of the lines. But you know, that's okay. It happens sometimes. I felt like I still read it pretty well, despite that.
Yeah, this brought to mind for me, totally unrelated, But it made me think about, as a child, my dad told me that butterflies would suck my blood, and so I always had I've had a lifelong fear of butterflies and moths.
Are you not afraid of mosquitoes, though?
No, I'm not afraid of mosquitoes. You know what? That would make sense. I don't know why I didn't make that connection, but I'm not afraid of them. I just hate them with a passion.
Which is valid. I also don't like mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm. But I like the part about the unformed chrysalis.
Mm. Thank you. That was actually an edit. This is like my final version. I tried to lean more into the butterfly imagery using like misshapen chrysalis. Mm-hmm. Originally, that line was misshapen in a human mold, which I'm so glad I changed.
That's also
it, though,
a fun line.
Because it leans more into that butterfly imagery.
Yeah, I feel like the butterfly imagery works better.
Mm-hmm. And then the part where it says fluttering heartbeats deep within the soul, that was also an edit, changed from tiny heartbeats deep within the soul. Like, I brought in like the idea of like
fluttering
because it's like butterflies, when they fly, they like flutter, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of the poems that I'm very proud of.
Yeah, you should be.
Thank you.
All right. Let's read the last one and then wrap things up because we've gone a bit over time. So this one is called Memory, and I believe it was written during one of the poetry workshops, and I think the prompt itself was about memories. So
yes, I think that was one of the prompts that I was like, talk about like memory or something like that.
Yeah, you were saying talk about like the memory as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no,
I think
memory is a person.
Well, yeah, I think because I always go on about how much I love personification in poetry and in writing in general.
I think that's
so
what it
I was like, personify one of these concepts, and one of them was memory, because I wrote a poem about personifying memory as like this guardian figure.
Okay, here we go. I see her in the corner of my eye, lurking in the shadows, grinning that Cheshire grin. As soon as I turn my head, she fades, still there, but only a phantom. She whispers to me, I see what you see, but she lies. She does not see what I see. She changes things to fit her story. It always has to fit her story. My mouth clacks open and shut, like a doll, my limbs all strung up. Her fingers bounce as they make me dance, saying things I'm not even sure I understand. Someday she's a friend, someday is a foe. What I know is that she will never, ever go. Or will she? My mother told me one day that eventually she will grow muddy and tarnished, hands covered in muck and grime, sticky and hard to hold. She tells me things I don't want to hear some days, stories of my friend, my dog, my grandmother. She says them sweetly, gently, with a whispered kiss, and disappears into the mist. On gray days, she reminds me of the sky. She laughs and sings and points out things that bring me joy. She dances for me, and I dance too. Some days, she is cruel, spitting bitter bullets from her mouth like she knows nothing else. She screams and yells, breaks glass and bone, and leaves me again, all alone. She's like the seasons, and changes every day, and every time she cycles back, she'll never be the same. I do not mind my fair weather friend. I don't care that she's typically round the bend. We take care of her and I, or mostly I, but that's okay. I will work with her, my old friend. She's with me until the finish line, brave and bold, until we meet the final threshold. So, you can hear, there are some parts that rhyme, because, at first, I don't think I was intending to rhyme. Then I was like, oh, maybe I should make things rhyme. And then I did, and then I didn't. But it just ended up, being kind of a mix.
An interesting part that stuck out in my brain was a friend not rhyming with finish line. Because my brain completed it as friend and end. But then you're like finishing.
Yeah, I could have done that.
But then you ended up rhyming with something else after that, and then ended up.
Yeah, bold and threshold.
Yeah, that was a really good rhyme there.
Well, thank you.
Another thing that I liked in there, which is something Neo is a big fan of, alliteration, like biting bullets.
Yeah,
like,
bitter bullets. Yeah.
Alliteration makes the flow really interesting. You know?
I love alliteration. You'll see that a lot when I write because...
You do.
Yeah, I love it. It's fun.
It creates a winding emphasis, I find. A crescendo. Feels like it starts soft and gets louder. That kind of... Mm-hmm. That's what alliteration kind of feels like to me.
Yeah, and a couple of comments about... there are hints to what was going on in my life at the time. Because if you go to... my mother told me one day she'll grow muddy and tarnished, hands covered in muck and grime. That was more about, you know, the idea of, you know, losing your memory of dementia and Alzheimer's, which, you know, at the time I had recently been working with people who do have Alzheimer's and dementia, and I kind of imagined it as, you know, having a brain that's kind of not been cleaned up, if that makes sense. And then she tells me things I don't want to hear some days of my friend, my dog, my grandmother. So I've had a lot of, you know, death in my life. And so that was kind of like things I don't want to hear is, you know, thinking about those people and my loved ones and, you know, being sad about it. But it's like a good sad sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Like a fond memory.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I think that's all we have for today.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything left to add?
Yeah, before we go, I'd like to invite an activity sort of thing for listeners to take part in their own time. It's an exercise that my poetry prof gave to us at the beginning of our poetry class last year. And I brought it back for one of our workshops on poetry. And that's where Alex, his poem that we read, I believe, in our first podcast recording. So put a timer on for 5 to 10 minutes and write using the prompt, "Things I Will Never Tell You About." And the idea here is not to edit as you go and not to read it as you go. Don't let your pen leave the page and just keep writing until the timer's up. You can go back and look at it later, maybe edit it if you want after, but the idea is just to write, just to keep going and not let your brain pause you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I find, honestly, we'll get onto that more in the editing workshop, but I personally find that waiting to do any kind of editing or revising until after you've finished writing is the best way to go, for me personally.
Yeah, if you spend the entire time you're writing editing, you're never going to get writing done.
Yeah, you'll overthink it, and then, honestly, the first draft is just for you.
Yeah.
And we'll get more into this later, but you don't really need to go back and revise it. The first draft is inevitably not going to be great.
And that's okay.
It's just for fun. It's to get your ideas out. All right. Well, thank you for coming to LCWS After Dark. It's been fun, and we'll see you next week for episode 4, Lines and Forms, where Melissa and I talk about narrative writing versus script writing. Well, then we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye.